From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A new study by Blue Cross Blue Shield of America has found that in the period between 2013 and 2016, there was a whopping 33% spike in diagnoses of major depression in the U.S. The American Psychiatric Association has also found an increase in anxiety levels over the country in the past year. Despite these dangerous trends, there has been a drop in mental health services, specifically in the availability of psychotherapy. Despite the effectiveness and safety of talk therapy, there is a growing reliance on alternative cures such as chemical antidepressants and something called cognitive behavior therapy. A new book shines a light on this trend and hopes to reverse it. Its author is Dr. Enrico Neolati. He's a psychotherapist, and his book is called Saving Talk Therapy: How Health Insurers, Big Pharma, and Slanted Science Are Ruining Good Mental Health Care. It's out from Beacon Press. Welcome to the program, Dr. Neolati.
I'm glad to be on the show.
So first, let's talk about what exactly the trend has been and why we're not hearing very much about it. In your book, you say it's a sort of a largely invisible trend. I'm sure someone like yourself in the field notices it dramatically. But how much more are we as a society reliant on the chemical fixes, such as the pills, the antidepressants, rather than something like talk therapy?
Well, you know, surveys show that actually psychotherapy remains popular. So it's something in the range of about 75% to actually 90% of people will confess that they would much rather talk to a professional about their problems, but somehow or other they get shunted into taking medications. So that becomes, it's surprising how that statistic in and of itself is very revealing.
And when you say psychotherapy, the term psychotherapy or talk therapy, what exactly does that mean? Who is, let's sort of start from the basics as well. Who's qualified to offer therapy? What's the difference between, you know, psychiatric help and, say, just counseling?
Well, the three main professions that are licensed yet to provide psychotherapy or psychologists. Well, actually, psychiatrists, psychologists, although psychiatrists are doing a lot less of it than they used to do, probably only about 10% of psychiatrists these days are actually trained to provide talk therapy. But you've got psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, and then marriage and family therapists are the essentially make up mental health professionals that are qualified to provide talk therapy.
Is there a misconception about what talk therapy is, even though you cited the statistics that huge numbers of Americans would prefer to do that rather than taking a pill?
Well, I think that there are changes in kind of the shape and form of psychotherapy that exists in our culture right now. And I write a lot about it in my book, Saving Talk Therapy. You know, when I was in therapy as a young man and when I was trained to do therapy back in the 80s and 90s, talk therapy, what it meant to kind of enter therapy was a very specific thing. You entered therapy to sort of bare your soul, to talk to an attentive, wise listener, to say the unsayable, think the unthinkable, feel the unfeelable on your own terms at your own pace. And what most people wanted to derive out of therapy was things like self-confidence, a greater capacity to be a loving person, to have a more productive work life, to be a better parent. These more kind of humanistic goals, I think, was what people wanted to derive out of psychotherapy. These days, people are less likely to go into therapy and more likely to receive mental health interventions, abbreviated therapy, goal-driven, technique-driven types of therapy that not uncommonly fall under the banner of cognitive behavioral therapy. So the shape and form of therapy, I think, is changing.
And I want to get into what CBT is a little bit later, but I feel like this trend that we see in the US, sadly, is in line with American culture of wanting quick fixes, tech fixes, you know, wanting to believe in technology, a pill to make everything go away, whereas therapy is more of a process, right?
Exactly. I think we're increasingly an impatient culture. Now more than ever, I would say that there's a need for good, long-term, in-depth psychotherapy that is a very patient, painstaking process, but that can yield wonderful results.
Now, of course, you point out in your book, and this is one of the big aspects of your book, is that there's one big reason why patients end up being pushed into taking antidepressant pills over talk therapy. And that's because it makes a lot of money for the pharmaceutical companies that produce these pills. Whether or not the pills might be effective, they might work quite well for some people. But how much of the trend we're seeing towards antidepressant pills versus talk therapy is a result of financial pressure from big pharma?
Well, I mean, that's kind of easy pickings. I think we all know about that. I think the more subtle forces at play that lead to the more pervasive use of medications, and I'm not a naysayer at all. People who read my book will quickly become apparent that medications can be a lifesaver for people with certain problems, but I think they're over promoted and overutilized. And one of the main reasons that I dig deeply into my book for that is that primary care physicians, after the marketing success of Prozac in the mid 80s. Now are function essentially as frontline mental health professionals. Most of the medication prescribing that has been done in the country right now, the vast majority of it, is by primary care physicians.
I didn't even know they could do that. I didn't know that your primary care physician could prescribe Prozac.
Oh my goodness, no. The vast majority of prescribing of antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, mood stabilizers, are being done by primary care physicians and medical specialists, not psychiatrists. That previously, before Prozac, if you went into your doctor and started crying because you discovered that your wife was having an affair, or that you felt like that you were a lousy parent and the stresses and strains of parenting were doing you in emotionally, you got a referral to a therapist. Nowadays, a primary care physician will pull out a prescription pad and write a prescription. At least it's more likely to occur that way. And that singular phenomenon explains the rise in medications, the prescribing medications. But it was, let's make no mistake about it, it was because of the marketing of Prozac to primary care physicians back in the 80s. That started that trend.
So there's also, of course, the issue of how insurance companies play into this, because when you have to pay for somebody to be prescribed an antidepressant pill, I'm guessing that it's essentially quite a bit cheaper for health insurance companies to cover that than to cover ongoing therapy. Or they might cover talk therapy, but very limited numbers of sessions. And before you know it, you've run out what your insurance company will cover, and you've just barely got into what your therapy can really help you with.
That's actually a myth, Sonali.
Is that right?
Up until recently, it's far more expensive to cover the cost of medication. Before patents run out and medications become the generic varieties are available that are cheaper. That happens to be the case right now, because a lot of the blockbuster drugs that were extraordinarily expensive, like a drug like Abilify, could cost $800-$900 a month. But these are now become, their patents have run out, and so now that those medications are the blockbuster ones are cheaper. So yes, you're seeing a trend in that direction. But for actually, psychotherapy is far less expensive to actually. If you look at the medical cost offset research, it saves money to have a generous mental health benefit, psychotherapy benefit. So
Insurance companies don't do that, right? Insurance. So as an individual, if you wanted to choose talk therapy over pills, your insurance company, would it be more or less likely to give you that option?
They're more likely to just to approve of medications, but it doesn't tend to unfold that way. The way it usually unfolds is someone will go to their primary care physician, they will identify some mental health problem, and then they get shunted into taking kind of medication because the primary care physician sees it as within their skill set to treat those mental health problems as a quasi-medical problem that just through prescribing medication. I'm oversimplifying some, but it's that tendency that shunts people into getting meds and not finding their way to a mental health professional and getting psychotherapy.
Dr. Nolati, you single out Kaiser Permanente in your book. That's my health insurance. My station's union members all have Kaiser Permanente. I've been quite happy with their model of healthcare, but it seems as though on mental health, they are quite dismal. Why?
You know, I should say up front that I've been on Kaiser myself for over 30 years. I did my pre-doctoral internship at the Department of Psychiatry at Kaiser Sunset. So my son was born at the flagship hospital on Sunset. I'm a huge
Mine too.
fan of medical services, but their mental health services are lousy. Some of the worst available out there right now, which is confounding. It's not uncommon for clients to show up at Kaiser and get a group intake for sessions to be. It's actually the system is set up so that you do not establish a relationship with a therapist, which all the research shows is what's conducive to progress. You need to meet with someone regularly who is attentive, who's caring, who's thoughtful, who listens to you, who cares, who's skilled in all those domains, and that over time, anxiety and depression is lifted through. But the system at Kaiser set up to not have a relationship with a person. Appointments are spaced out. You're shunted into group therapy. You're shunted into medications. And it's really deplorable, if you ask me.
Now, it seems as though because insurance companies like Kaiser don't emphasize or don't promote talk therapy as an effective tool to combat depression, anxiety, et cetera, that often people end up spending out of pocket for it. And then it becomes something that those with enough income can afford. And then it becomes something that poor people who might need it even more because they struggle with more traumas don't get access to. Does this become a class issue?
Yes, I think so. The simple answer to your question is yes. People who have resources tend to get the better quality therapy and therapists, and they get more of it. There's a huge problem, even though the parity laws are operating right now. Studies show that the average person they're six times more likely to pay out of pocket for therapy than for medical services. So insurance companies here's how it usually happens. Reimbursement rates right now are about what therapists charged in the 1980s. So for the more skilled and experienced a psychotherapist becomes, the less likely they are to be on a panel. So you have a revolving door of clinicians that come in and out of panels. It becomes difficult for clients who have managed care type insurance to get a provider who will take their insurance. They have to make multiple calls to find someone. They get multiple rejections, and then they're worn down by the system, and they end up being forced to pay out of pocket for therapy, and then it's a setup for getting less therapy than they need, because for affordability reasons.
Dr. Nalati, we mentioned cognitive behavior therapy as another direction in which patients are shunted along with antidepressant pills as an alternative to talk therapy. What is cognitive behavior therapy? Why is it thought to be something that works?
Well, I zero in my book on the less redeemable forms of cognitive behavioral therapy. So I should make a caveat up front that what I'm about to say doesn't pertain to all of cognitive behavioral therapy. But too much of the time right now, there's a saturation effect of more scripted short-term models of care, evidence-based practice forms of care where the next generation of clinicians are being taught to believe that, you know, 12 sessions of symptom reducing therapy focused on changing your faulty cognitions, changing your bad habits, behaviorally speaking, setting goals, moving quickly and fast and directively sort of through therapy. These forms of therapy are dominating the marketplace right now and really selling the general public short.
And it sounds just like the thing that we were talking about earlier about American culture being conducive to these quick fixes, right? That, and also personal responsibility. We have this very destructive personal responsibility ethic in this country that if you're going through something, it must be your fault. Therefore, if you simply change your behavior, your problem will be solved, right?
Yes, I have an article that I wrote that's going to be coming out in the Journal of Humanistic Psychology, where I actually make a series of arguments saying that these forms of therapy, these short-term cog behavioral therapies, are really unethical to practice because I think they promote this ethos that people are, you know, can achieve meaningful and lasting change quickly and rapidly through changing their faulty thoughts and their unrealistic thinking. And I think that's an ethical question, because I think that for people, like, real authentic change is hard won. It's very difficult. It's far harder to change primal emotions like envy, shame, rage, lust, which are the reason that most people go into therapy to get help with. We have far less control over those affective processes than we do our cognitions. And so I think there's some ethical issues that arise by perpetuating these beliefs that short-term therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, can actually create meaningful and lasting change.
Now, shouldn't we be taking an evidence-based approach to mental health and how to address mental health? That is, are things like cognitive behavior therapy and antidepressants studied to and found to, you know, be effective enough? So let me ask you, how, you know, when you compare talk therapy with the use of antidepressants, with the use of cognitive behavior therapy, which has the best outcome on actually helping patients through their struggles?
Actually, what doesn't get a lot of press are the very good studies that exist out there that shows that long-term, in-depth, psychoanalytically oriented, humanistically oriented models of care are really where it's at. So there's a study called the Tavistock Adult Depression Study that came out that showed that about 44% of depressed individuals who get about 18 months of weekly psychoanalytically oriented therapy, when you assess them a few years out, that their depression is alleviated. They're no longer seriously depressed, compared with only about 10% of people who get treatment as usual, which is cognitive behavioral therapy and then medication. So there is evidence-based, solid evidence-based, you know, long-term models of care, actually, when you dig into the research, are the most beneficial.
And yet, of course, unfortunately, they are not as widely used as they should be. Do you think that the tide is turning, that people, because of a greater awareness on over-reliance of antidepressant pills, especially, that people are, you know, realizing through books like yours and other awareness that good old-fashioned talk therapy that you just pointed out is known to work is the better route to take?
Unfortunately, no.
Have you sent Kaiser executives copies of your book?
Maybe I should.
But you're saying that the tide is not changing?
No, unfortunately, I think it's swinging in the other direction. I think that one of the reasons that I'm galvanized right now is in my kind of, I was going to say twilight years as a therapist. That's not quite true. The great thing about my profession is that the older you get, the wiser that people perceive you to be, and they want to have you as a therapist. So I presume that I'll be doing this for much longer time. But no, the reason I wrote the book, and I have a lot of articles, magazine articles and whatnot, and journal articles that I'm generating right now to try to push back the tide, to preserve what I think is in decline, that actually most Americans actually want, and what they think about in terms of therapy, but they're not getting.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your website as well as information about the book from our site. Thank you so much, Dr. Nalati.
You're very welcome, Sonali. Thanks for having me on the show.
My guest is Dr. Enrico Nalati, spelled G-N-A-U-L-A-T-I, if you want to Google him. He's a psychotherapist. We've been discussing his book, Saving Talk Therapy, How Health Insurers, Big Pharma, and Slanted Science Are Ruining Good Mental Health Care. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.